You're listening to WERALP Arlington 96.7 FM. Welcome to another episode of the world-famous, award-winning Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, filmmaker, film festival director, film critic, and lover of film and TV. You can find all the back episodes and so much more at PictureLockShow.com. In this episode, we'll get a quick review of Spider-Man Homecoming from Picture Lock contributor Richie Winsler. I'll talk with Aaron Goodmiller, the director-producer of Admins, about his feature film, which you can now check out on Video On Demand. I'll also talk with John Michael Whalen about his feature film, Can Hunt, which is premiering Sunday, July 9th at the Cinema Arts Theater in Fairfax, Virginia at 7 p.m. But first, I want to make sure that you all know that on Friday mornings, I like to get my weekend movie review on WERA's morning show, Arlington in the Morning. This past Friday, we talked Baby Driver. It's still a great film to see if you haven't already. I'm sure you've heard the buzz. So I'm going to play my review for the film as heard this past Friday. Make sure that you tune in to Arlington in the Morning weekdays from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and catch me Fridays after 8:30 a.m. to hear my weekend movie review. Again, I don't generally give my reviews on Picture Lock kind of the day of. I usually have someone else do it, but this is going to be a great way for if you want to know what's going on that weekend and hear from your boy, Kevin Sampson. Make sure you tune in to Arlington in the Morning on Fridays right after 8:30 a.m., or I'll be able to put it on the Picture Lock podcast. Make sure you subscribe to that on the weekends. The DC Black Film Festival is still looking for volunteers with a one-to-one match for every shift you volunteer. You can check out a film block at no cost. We're hoping you'll sign up because we know we can't make a successful film festival without you, the volunteer. So go to www.dcbff.org and hit the volunteer tab to sign up. Thank you very much. Movies, movies, movies. That's all ahead on Picture Lock.
Saturday night at 8 o'clock, I know where I'm gonna go. I'm gonna pick my baby up and take her to the picture show. Everybody in the neighborhood is dressing up to be there too.
Oh, and if we're hearing those soulful sounds, that means that we're getting ready to talk to Kevin Sampson of Picture Lock. Welcome to the show, Kev.
Yuli, what's going on, man?
Hey, enjoying, looking forward to what you got on tap for us, man. You know, I understand, you know, you're an Edgar Wright fan, huh?
I would say so, actually. You know, one of my friends actually said, welcome to his top five directors of all time, and Edgar Wright, after seeing Baby Driver, which we're going to talk about today. And I would say Edgar Wright always has a creative, unique way of telling stories through film. So out this weekend, we've got Baby Driver and Despicable Me 3. I'm looking forward to actually seeing Despicable Me 3 with the kids this weekend, but Baby Driver is definitely the film to see for the adults out there. It's the rated R crime comedy about a getaway driver who takes part in a terrible heist. The film stars Ansel Elgort, Kevin Spacey, Lily James, John Bernthal, John Hamm, and Jamie Foxx. And I have to say, the film starts out a little bit blow for my taste. I mean, it starts out with a bang in terms of there's this awesome like getaway car stunt driving that happens. But then after that, you kind of start to slowly get into the characters. And I mean, these characters are like larger than life. They really feel kind of false, but it's this interesting study in criminology and the criminal mind. But I mean, it's just some great work from like Jamie Foxx. I think this is some of the greatest stuff we've seen from him in a while. He plays a character named Bat, who's like crazy. Like the loose cannon that you don't want to be around. This guy's like a killer. Kevin Spacey is like this over-the-top mastermind that basically hires these criminals. He never hires the same criminals twice, except for Baby, who's played by Ansel Elgort, because he is, as he says, Mozart in a go-kart. And so basically, when Baby was young, his family got in a car accident. He has this humming that's still in his ears, so he's always playing music. One of the things that director Edgar Wright does within this film is he just really does a great job of playing with diegetic and non-diegetic sound. And that is basically the music or sounds that you hear that when you're watching the TV or the movie screen, you know, you see like if someone talks. So that's diegetic sound. And then the non-diegetics is usually like the score, right? You don't see that music. But he brings that in such a well way throughout the whole entire film where you can definitely tell that you are in the hands of a director that has a vision, knows the story that he's trying to tell. And overall, like I said, it kind of started out a little slow for me. I kind of would say it's kind of like getting your foot and shoehorned into your shoe. But once you're in that shoe, like it is a comfortable joyride. And I have to say, like the tension that's built up into it, and especially heading toward the climax, it's just one of the films that is definitely going to be on people's top list for the 2017. So definitely go check it out. I don't want to give it too many spoilers or anything like that, but I mean, it was awesome. And honestly, at the end of it, I was kind of like, man, it would be kind of cool to see Edgar Wright direct one of these Fast and the Furious movies. Like, the camera work for the stunt choreography and the driving, it was just awesome.
Ah, I got it. Well, Rusty A. Roberts Jr., my usual ride or die partner, who is never here on Fridays, he saw it on, I mean, he ran out on Wednesday when it opened, and he was talking it up yesterday. In fact, so much so, I wanted to smack him upside his head because I was like, dude, we're going to hear about it. You know, it's like, what are you doing, man? You know, but yet there it was. So, yeah, so he, but yes, I'm sorry, what?
Sorry, I was going to say, yeah, no, I think a lot of the hype is worthy. I give it a B+. I don't think it was a perfect film. Like I said, it started out a little slow, but like once you kind of finally get into the world, I definitely think that it's just a great time at the movies. It's kind of like when movies are done well, like what it could possibly be. I mean, I do kind of like Ansel Elgort has never been one of my favorite actors, and unfortunately, he's the lead, and so like the more that he doesn't talk, the better it is. I hate to see him run. I hated seeing him run in Divergent series. And he does a lot of running in this. He just looks stiff. He looks weird. So that kind of pulls you out of it. But ultimately, that aside, I mean, the cast is stacked. The story is great. The direction is great. B+.
Mm-hmm. I got it. All right. And, you know, so I hope that you also enjoy Despicable Me this weekend. I'm sure the kids will be very excited about getting out to that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. We're looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you say that for Baby Driver, your review is B+.
B+. That means go see it. It's worth the money this weekend if you're looking for something to see.
Gotcha. Hey, what's coming up today on Picture Lock?
Oh, man, I was sick earlier this week, so it's going to be a rerun, unfortunately.
Aww.
However, you can definitely check out picturelockshow.com for movie reviews. I'm going to have my Baby Driver review on the Big Stick. So you can definitely check out picturelockshow.com.
There you go. All right. Well, as always, thank you very much, Kevin. I appreciate you coming on and bringing your wonderful and unique brand of movie reviews. And, of course, just got to remind folks, even though it's a rerun, what time can they check out Picture Lock today on WERA?
Fridays at 3 p.m., Mondays at 1 p.m. Thank you.
There you go. Thank you, Kevin. We'll talk to you next week, man.
All right.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. And on the line with me, I have Richie Winsler, who has been writing for Picture Lock as of late. I wanted to introduce him to the audience. He has the 411 on Spider-Man Homecoming. Richie, welcome to Picture Lock.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. My pleasure. So, Richie, just to kind of introduce you to the Picture Lock audience, when did you first fall in love with film?
Came across it one day, and I've just been entranced with it ever since.
And currently, you are in grad school at American University. Go Eagles! how's that coming?
Good. I'm currently shooting my graduate thesis film right now. So that's been a fun experience.
Awesome, man. Well, good luck, and definitely want to thank you for contributing to the site. Now, one of the things that are on a lot of people's mind is Spider-Man Homecoming, man. Is it good? Let the audience know what's Spider-Man Homecoming about, and what can they look forward to see?
Okay, so this right off the bat, Spider-Man Homecoming is, if you must know, this is the best Spider-Man film since 2004's Spider-Man 2. In case you were wondering, this takes basically 2 months after the events of Captain America Civil War. It just basically reintroduces Peter Parker as he tries to navigate being Spider-Man and going and being a high school student at the same time. Compared to like all the recent Marvel Cinematic Universe films to date, this is a much more grounded take. Grounded take. And if you want a comparison, this is probably the most grounded MCU film since Ant-Man back in 2015.
Awesome. So, you know, a lot of people, we've seen the trailer. We kind of have a feeling that Spidey is going up against Vulture. You know, what's that like, especially with Michael Keaton, you know, just doing Birdman a while ago. He's obviously done Batman, and now he's doing Vulture. I guess he kind of like plays or enjoys playing these superheroes, but is he a worthy opponent?
Yes, like I would safely say that this is quite honestly the best villain that a MCU film has had since Loki. As a comic book fan, I was a little nervous since the Vulture is typically goofy in the comics, but the way that they portray the Vulture was really good. And it seems that Michael Keaton seems like he's having a good time playing a bad guy.
Awesome. So overall, I guess you would definitely recommend Spider-Man Homecoming this weekend. We won't be let down.
Oh, no. You will come with this. It's probably, in my opinion, probably one of the best MCU films to date. It's probably the funniest films that Marvel has produced. And after Spider-Man Homecoming, I'm incredibly excited to see what Marvel will do. Will take Spidey now, since now that they're helping Sony to make these films.
Awesome. All right, Richie. Well, thanks again for writing for Picture Lock. You can definitely check out some of his reviews at picturelockshow.com. Richie, how can people follow you on social media?
Well, if you want to find me on Facebook, just type in Richie Winslow, and then on Twitter, you can find me at Mr. Mitchell. So it's at TATMOLICHALD.
All right. Thanks, Richie. We appreciate it.
No problem.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, and on the line with me, I have Aaron Goodmiller, the director-producer of... Admins. Aaron, what's going on, man?
Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm excited to talk to you today. As you know, one of the first questions that I always start out with is, when did you first fall in love with film?
I guess you could say of ever since a young age, I've always loved watching movies and stuff. It was kind of a family tradition. Every Friday night, we would ever since we got a VCR player, we would rent a couple movies, and my mom would make a whole bunch of pizza, and we would just sit down and have pizza and soda and watch movies all night long. And then, as luck would have it, my first job, the people that I worked with, every Friday night, that was their thing. They always got together, and everybody in the company went and saw a movie. So it kind of carried into that, and then just kind of snowballed from there. I've always loved going to the movie theater and enjoyed watching films, and it's kind of, I guess you could kind of say it's an escape. I kind of go in there and I watch, and kind of everything else melts away except for that big silver screen in front of you.
I can totally relate, and I definitely agree with you 100%. I used to love when we would go to Blockbuster when I was a kid, and we had rent those movies. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was one time where we had this huge snowstorm, and we found out that for some strange reason the video store was still open, and we took like a 2-mile trek with sleds and everything, and walked our way all the way to the video store so we could get some movies and come back and watch them. We got like 8 movies that day.
Oh my goodness, that is awesome. Yeah, how about those times when like the new release would come out and like everybody had already gotten, you know, the film, and so it was just the cover. Remember that?
And then you would stand up at the front and just kind of wait and wait and wait for that movie to come in. Have you checked the box yet?
Right, exactly. Let me get a rain check on that. Oh man, that's awesome. All right, so Aaron, tell us a little bit about your breaking in story. Like, how did you get into the film business? So you went from, you know, just enjoying films and watching them to actually shooting the films.
Right. So I guess in the mid 90s, I had kind of been, me and a friend were just like up late one night, just hanging out and stuff. And it had been like right after the Oscars. So I mentioned at one point, man, I'd love to have one of those. He's like, well, why can't you? And I was like, at that point, it had never dawned on me that I could, you know, work towards, you know, getting an Oscar of some sort or just an award of some sort.
Right.
And so I was like, yeah, well, why can't I? So at that point, I started writing a script. You read Sid Field and all those kinds of books on how to write a script. And up until then, it was the cost of getting in. You know, you have to buy the film and the editing and all that kind of stuff. It was just too cost prohibitive. And then, like, right around 2000, 2001, they started coming out with the DV players with the mini DV port, and you could plug it right into the computer and import all your information and just edit it on Final Cut. And I was like, oh my God, it's like a light bulb went off. It's like a door opening. So as soon as that happened, I bought a camera, and me and a couple friends, Eric Espejo and a couple of other friends, got together and shot a short, and it was horrible. And then we just kept shooting more and more films and learning from all of our mistakes until we got up to about 2008, where we decided, you know what, we've cut our teeth on short films, and I think it's about time we make a full-length feature.
You know, it's awesome. I appreciate you being honest and saying, hey, you know, we shot shorts and it was horrible. I think that's one of the things. I was actually at a restaurant, and I got my fortune cookie, and it said, failure is the mother to success. And so if you could, just for the audience, kind of talk a little bit about what you learned from shooting shorts to help you to be able to transition into shooting a feature. Because I definitely think that cutting your teeth, like you said, is very important.
Right, right. For us shooting shorts, for me especially, it was just learning about the entire process. Because you have to go, whether you're shooting a short or full-length feature, you have to go through casting and pre-production and setting up your shots and making sure you get, you only have a certain amount of time to shoot it. So you got to set up your schedule and, you have to hire the right people for the jobs. And, you have to go through the entire process of making a film. So it's really good to do a bunch of shorts because you can kind of cut your teeth and figure out if you hire outside people outside of your friends or even your friends, you can kind of go, okay, well, this guy is fantastic on set. Oh, well, I may need to help this guy a little bit on the next one, or we can kind of do this on the next one, or we should really hire an editor for the next one so that we're not kind of slowed down by the editing process, all that kind of thing. I think just going through the whole process of making the film is what helps you to be a better filmmaker. The more you do it, the more you're going to be, the more better you're going to be at it.
You're listening to Picture Doc. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking to the guy that respects the process, the director and producer of Admins, Aaron Goodmiller. Yeah, I totally agree with you, Aaron. And so that brings us up to Admins because you have this feature film that's out. It's available now on video on demand. Could you tell us a little bit about the film?
So Admins is a day in the life of a couple of systems administrators. It's essentially a homage to the film Clerks by Kevin Smith. Where he did a day in the life of a couple of clerks. So Eric and I have kind of batted ideas back and forth. You're sending emails back and forth. Hey, this thing happened to me at work today, and you go, oh man, that's kind of like what happened in Clerks, except in the systems administrator world, and that kind of thing. So we kind of over the years had a whole bunch of different small scenarios, and then we were like, Eric at one point started asking people, hey, would you think this would funny? Do you think this is funny? The idea of doing a full length feature on it, and everybody we talked to seemed to kind of go, yeah, that would be hilarious. So we're like, you know what? Let's just do it. Let's just make the movie. So that's kind of how we came to make the
Sweet. Admins now. You shot it in the DMV, correct?
In what now?
In the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area?
Yes, we shot it at Tyson's Corner. There was a company called Uber Offices. I think they've changed their name since, hopefully not because of the film, but they're kind of like a Regis Offices kind of thing where you can rent an office for a day or a month or conference rooms, that kind of thing. And we went to them and rented out two offices for about 2 weeks and then worked kind of around their schedule so that we weren't bothering them. We would come in at like 12 and work till like midnight, 1 o'clock, so that by the time we were doing all of our tough scenes where we kind of had to be loud, we weren't bothering everybody, that kind of thing.
Right. No, that makes sense. And I think that is what it's all about in indie filmmaking, right? Like using places to your advantage. That's really cool, actually. What would you say? My bad. What would you say? No, that's all right. What would you say was some of the most memorable experiences that you had on set?
On set. Oh man. The entire set was it was pretty much a blur. I mean, we shot 9 pages of material over 9 days, so it was very hectic. I mean, I would show up at like 10, and everybody else would start showing up at 11, and then the cast would show up at 12, and then we would start shooting, and it would be all day until 12. But I guess the most hectic thing we had going on was, so we had the two offices. One was an external office, which had a window. We had an internal office, which had no windows. So one of the things we wanted to do is we didn't want to have to worry about light coming through the window. So we would shoot the external the office with the external window during the day up until about 5-6 o'clock, and then we would break for dinner. Then we would shoot the stuff in the secondary office at night. Though again, we don't have to worry about light and stuff. But the only problem is all of our stuff was in the other room. So every night at dinner time, we would also have to do essentially a company move from one office to the other office, so that we could set up the second office. And then once everything was done at night, we would again have to move everything from the one office back to the other office. It was crazy having to do all that every single day, twice a day.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I guess at least it was only 9 days, right?
Yeah. And luckily we had one day where we shot outside, and we had one day where we shot at a coffee house. So we only had 7 days having to do that move, but it was still pretty hectic.
Yeah, I can imagine. All right, so you know, you've already had the film out on the festival circuit. Can you just talk a little bit about the reception so far?
The film was accepted into four festivals. We had to decline on two of them because they kind of we had given our world premiere to one festival, and the other two festivals occurred prior to that festival. So we kind of had to take our film out of those two festivals. But in the two festivals, the other two festivals, we received eight nominations for two nominations for Best Picture, one a nomination for writing, a couple nominations for acting, and a couple nominations for directing. So it seemed to be received fairly well to the festivals we got into.
It does sound like that, man. That's pretty awesome. You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking with the director and producer of Admins, Aaron Goodmiller. So, Aaron, I think one of the all-important questions is, how can folks find the film?
Well, it's available in three places. You can find it on Amazon. If you do a search for Admins DVD, it'll pop right up. We're available on Vimeo. You can rent it or purchase a video download of it through there. And on our Facebook site, you can actually buy a Blu-ray of it. And the Blu-ray of it has like a ton of extras where you can we've got a couple of extended scenes, and we have a cast and crew audio track that you can listen to. So the Blu-ray gives you all the options, but if you just want to see the movie itself, you can get it through Amazon or Vimeo.
That sounds great, man. How can people find you if they want to find you on social media and all that good stuff?
I am available at Aaron Goodmiller on Twitter. I have an Instagram, but I don't think I've even posted anything up on Instagram. That's, again, at Aaron Goodmiller. I'm also available on Facebook as Aaron Goodmiller. I think I'm the only Aaron Goodmiller in the world. So if you do a search for that, then you're going to find me, guaranteed.
What are the chances? Like, there's plenty of Kevin Sampsons. I'm just so shocked. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of crazy. I do a search for my name all the time on Google just to see if there is going to be somebody else with my name, but I've yet to find
anybody.
Yeah,
I think maybe we all do that. I do that too. All right, Aaron, man, I appreciate you coming on the show. Again, you can get Admins now on video on demand. Really appreciate you giving those nuggets of wisdom for filmmakers that might be out there trying to shoot their first feature.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Let's take a quick break for promos. Stay tuned. For you, the listeners of Picture Lock's podcast, Gamefly is offering a premium free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service.
I used to play PlayStation a ton. Pre-kids, I had money to buy the latest game out, but I really don't have the time or money like I used to give towards my hobby. That's why Gamefly makes so much sense. For a low monthly fee, I can get the latest console and handheld game delivered to my door. I keep it as long as I want and can send it right back to get a new one. The cool thing is, if you like a game so much that you don't want to send it back, you can keep it for a low used price. There are never any due dates or late fees. To get your free trial today, go to gameflyoffer.com/picturelock. Again, that's gameflyoffer.com/picturelock for your free 30-day trial.
What up, everybody? Los Angeles actor Kelvin O'Brien, South Carolina native, chopping it up with my man Big Kev. You're listening to Picture Lock. Keep listening. This man's the bomb.
Hey, everybody, this is filmmaker Joe Carabello. You are listening to the best show in the whole entire planet, Picture Lock. Stay tuned.
Hey, y'all, this is Otessa Goddar, creator of Orange Juice and Bishop's Garden and Lemma, and you are listening to Picture Lock.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, and I'm really excited because on the line with me, I have writer-director of Canned Hunt, John Michael Whalen. John, what's going on, man?
Hey, man, how you doing? It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Man, the pleasure is all mine. All right, so, John, as you know, one of the first questions I always start out with, when did you first fall in love with film?
Well, that's a great question. I got to say, ever since I was a kid, I was always into movies. Just as far back as I can remember, I was kind of exposed to a lot of really great movies. And early on, I noticed that movies were a lot different than the TV back then in the early 80s. And one film that really stood out a lot was Wim Wenders' Paris, Texas, which is a phenomenal Sam Shepard screenplay. And from there, you know, I got into Peckinpah. Father was a big fan of his, so I got into that. A lot of Japanese cinema, which I think has absolutely gotten into just my wheelhouse of influences as a cinematographer and a director. Growing up, to me, the 90s, the early 90s, up until about, you know, 98, was, to me, the greatest period of independent film. And nowadays, independent film, you know, there's a pretty good argument that it doesn't really exist that much anymore, because all the people that were making small films basically been gobbled up by the big studios, and there kind of is no such thing as somebody who just goes out as a renegade and makes their own movie. 92, you saw Rodriguez and Tarantino come out and just completely change cinema. So it was a great time to be alive back then, and especially to be a film buff.
John, let me tell you, I'm getting tears in my eyes. I'm talking to a fellow film nerd. I'm so excited. I mean, well, we could geek out. I can see this is going to be a fun conversation. Yeah, man, I totally agree with you, man. Like, that, I remember when that first kind of things kind of changed where a lot of people started to kind of complain that, like, independent film, independent cinema still had, like, you know, widely known actors in it. You know, this little indie film is actually starring, like, an A-list star, but it's in Sundance, and it's supposed to be some indie film. So, yeah, it is kind of like, it's like erasing, I don't know, I guess, not even the middle class. It's just erasing all, you know, middle and lower class in terms of filmmakers. So you're right, like, kind of capturing that, hey, let's get out here and do it, and kind of see what happens, but more so for the passion of the craft is kind of missing, at least in, like, what we consider mainstream indie films.
Absolutely. I mean, I got a lot of theories as to what went wrong.
Well, it sounds like I'm gonna It sounds like I'm going to have you on for a separate conversation. I'm going to write this down right now. What went wrong with indie films? I'm going to have John Michael Whalen back on. All right. So, John, really quickly, you know, you are obviously kind of broken in terms of film as a cinematographer. And, you know, Can Hunt is beautifully shot. So could you talk a little bit about you're very welcome. Could you talk about your breaking in story? How did you get into the film business? And, you know, why do you love cinematography, painting the picture?
Awesome. Yeah, great question. To be honest, and this is the difference between, I think, you know, my generation and the kids that are coming up. I was going to college, and I really didn't even know what a cinematographer was or what their job really entailed. And I was, you know, going to college, studying lighting, and then this lighting teacher, you know, basically was like, okay, you know, it's not the director that sets the light and makes it look the way it looks. It's the cinematographer. It's like, and everybody in the class was just like, huh, really? And you can absolutely accredit the vast knowledge that every person has now because of the DVD commentary. That has just completely just turned everybody into like cinephiles and scholars to some point. But back in, you know, 94 when I was going to college, it was just, you know, no such thing as a DVD. And whatever you learned through, you know, filmmaking was either somebody's been doing it forever on film or you just trial and error. So right. All-time favorite looking film that I've, you know, almost embarrassingly will say that I've seen about 30 times is Blade Runner. And to me, there is not a single bad frame in that film. That was always the high watermark. Got into just, you know, tweaking around with cameras at a pretty early age, shooting 35mm stills. And by the time I got into college, we were experimenting with 16mm. As well as some standard definition cameras for video.
Yeah,
way before the whole HD revolution took over. And did pretty good. You know, I sort of had a knack for shooting other people's shorts and got out of college. Did some pretty depressing things by, like, photographing field hockey games for local high schools and just took whatever job I could get, started calling up film commission. And I just got so frustrated trying to get on sets. I remember one in particular time, Hannibal, the Ridley Scott film, was shooting in the D.C. Marketplace. And I kept calling them up saying, need to get on the set. Every day the guy was like, can't do it. You know, you're not part of the union. And I was like, okay, I'll talk to you tomorrow. And I called every day.
Oh, man, I love it.
Just got so frustrated because I was honestly going for jobs that were like just being an assistant or a PA. I couldn't get anything. Could not get anything. So the local filmmaker posted on Craigslist saying he was looking for a cinematographer. I said, you know what, here's my resume, I'm a cinematographer. And next thing I know, I had a meeting with him, and he was crazy enough to hire me. And that was literally, you know, just the first film I ever shot. It was, man, what was that? It was directed by Adam Meyer, and it was called Flesh Remembers. And it was a great mix of, like, Chinatown and just a great film noir. So I shot that with him. Then that led to another film shortly after, and it goes to show you that if you just say you are something and you believe it, you can pull it off.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking to the man who doesn't give up and who believes in himself, John Michael Whalen, the writer-director of Can Hunt. Yeah, I totally agree with you, John. You know, you got to set those intentions. And, you know, like, if you don't believe in yourself, like, who else is going to believe in yourself, you know?
Exactly. That's 100% true.
All right, so I love the fact, and we're going to get into Can Hunt in a second, but I love the fact that Torsu Productions, your company, your motto is story is king. Can you tell us, you know, why is that, why is story king?
Well, it basically comes down to the most basic fact is if you don't have a story that people are going to be invested in or interested in, you don't have anything. There's a lot of films out there and a lot of people that sort of like mimic Terrence Malick, for instance. It says, I mean, his films are like cinematography reels, you know? I mean, it's just like beautiful shots by Lubezki. Incredible. But at the same time, it's like, you know, well, tell me what, you know, what's real life about? You know, what was, you know? So I wonder, could you pinpoint that story? What? Probably not.
Right.
So for me, it was always about having a strong story, and that's what everything is dependent on, straight up. Like, if you can't tell me what story is fairly concisely, then, you know, you should really think about rewriting it or maybe just getting a writer to do it for you.
Most definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's 100% about the story, and from that, everything springs from it. You know, the look of the film, where you put the camera, the performances, all from the script.
Right. So I'm going to go ahead and flip the script on you. You said story is king. Your feature film is called Canned Hunt, and it's premiering July 9th at Cinema Arts Theater in Fairfax, Virginia at 7 p.m. So go ahead. If the story is king, give us a description of the film.
Well, thank you. I certainly will. Basically, what it comes down to is three white-collar men go out on a night of drinking and just randomly find a African-American homeless man, beat him up, which we've seen quite a few times in, like, bum videos and all those horrible things on YouTube, thinking that nobody's going to care about him because he's homeless. You know, he's homeless for a reason. Nobody wants him. So they take him to a little warehouse, work him over really bad. And what they don't know is that every day there was a young boxer who would give the old man food. He does care about him. So over the course of one night, he tracks the guys down and reflects on his relationship with his friend and mentor. And they all meet up at a bar at the end.
Nice. And I'm sure they don't just have some drinks. Man, so you know, this is interesting. What inspired you to write the material?
Fascinating enough, I used to live in Arlington. I currently live in Falls Church, but I was in a place called the Oakland Apartment. And every night I'd get back late, as I usually do, have a night out, and there was a really attractive woman who would sit on the stoop of my building smoking. And I'd say hello to her, and after a couple weeks, you know, we finally started to talk and have a couple cigarettes. And one day her boyfriend walked by, had a hoodie on, covered his face, and she just rolled her eyes at him. And was like, you know, got into another fight. And I was like, oh, really? And she was like, yeah, but he lost. So I was like, oh, wow, kind of a scrapper or what? Like, yeah. She's like, no, he's a professional boxer. So I was like, wow. Mm. Pretty cool. And she was like, he's not that good. So so after some time, you know, just, you know, talking with her, getting to know her, every time I'd see the guy walk by, I would just be like, oh, yeah, he's just a bad boxer, you know, not think much of him until one day he stopped and started talking to me, and I noticed this guy's face was full of scar tissue and his knuckles were gigantic. And then it dawned on me that, like, yeah, he may be a bad boxer, but he could probably decimate 99% of anybody that stepped up to him. So that led to, you know, mix that, you know, reality with my, you know, sort of interest in Japanese cinema and the samurai. I was like, well, you know, boxers are kind of like samurai or gunslingers, where they're just like literally considered lethal weapons. I mean, you're not allowed to hit somebody if you're a professional boxer. Mm-hmm. So that sort of just started, that was the kernel of
well, what if we take this guy that's sort of a good fighter, you know, he's got, you know, peaks and valleys to his career, and, you know, everybody,
right,
once they get a few drinks into them, thinks they're, you know, Mike Tyson, you know, the average guy is like, oh, yeah, I can take anybody. But, you know, as you start to find out through the film, you kind of can't, you know, unless you're up against, when you're up against a professional fighter, man, it's,
right, exactly. You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking with the writer-director of Can Hunt, which is premiering July 9th at Cinema Arts Theater in Fairfax, Virginia at 7 p.m., John Michael Whalen. John, man, you know, it feels a little bit like a throwback to films of old. And I know, obviously, we've been talking about how, you know, you're kind of inspired from, you know, the 80s to 90s kind of independent cinema. Would you say that that's kind of something that you also infused into Canned Hunt?
Absolutely. I just felt that, you know, independent films now were just lacking that sort of sense of urgency. You know, it just, there's no sort of fire in what's going on now. It just, you look at films back in the 90s, and it was like, okay, this person is, like, putting everything they have into it, you know. Sometimes the camera moves are a little jittery, you know. Sometimes, you know, you'd see whatever, like a mic in the shot. But there's something to it. There's, like, a kinetic life to it. And that's sort of lacking in what I was seeing, you know, in this day and age. I wanted to get back to it. You know, I just wanted to say, you know, I think we had a great script. I think we got phenomenal actors. And, you know, from hell or high water, you just got to make it happen. And I think the film really has that, you know, that vibe. I mean, it's certainly a slower paced sort of, you know, drama, but I still think it's got some sort of, you know, energy to it that I personally wanted to see again.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, you have definitely local DMV actors. I definitely saw Brittany Martz in there. That was cool to see. Can you talk a little bit about your cast?
Absolutely. Right at the lead is Hayden Livesay. He had done quite a bit around town for about two or three years before I had met up with him. I remember getting his headshot very early on and just sort of like, you know, this guy's way too good looking to be a fighter, you know. So kind of topped it aside, went through everything. Then I circled back to him, and I noticed, like, you know, one of his skills was boxing and mixed martial arts. So, you know, I said, you know, maybe I can, you know, make this guy look a little more, you know, not so pretty. You know, so called him up, met with him. And I tell you, I was sitting at Greenberry's in McLean waiting for him, and I saw him walk up to the door. And, like, seeing him walk and carry himself, that was it. I was like, this guy knows how to fight. Like, no question about it. Had a great meeting with him and just didn't want to meet with anybody else. Like, I just knew. So then after that, second biggest, you know, character to cast was that of Anton. That was tough. I guess somebody that looked like they could have been a professional fighter a few, you know, years before and just have acting chops. And I cannot tell you how many people I went through, audition, Skype, all that stuff. And, you know, Cliff McMullen was somebody who I had known for quite a while. Problem was, he was SAG. And I did not want to have to deal with the Screen Actors Guild. So after a while, I was like, you know, I think Cliff is just, I'd be nuts to deal with anybody else. So I bit the bullet. I had to go through SAG, deal with all their stuff, which is a whole nother issue to talk about.
Right.
Got Cliff, and I had him for 4 days. And we just, I mean, it was incredible working with him. And lead villain is David Glass, who I think is, you know, perfect to be, you know, just about any villain you can think of. I mean, he looks like he could be in the next Mad Max video or movie.
Yeah.
Huge guy, super intimidating, but like most people like that. I mean, he is one of the funniest people you could ever have. And having him on set was great, but at the same time, like you lost a lot of time because you were just clowning around with him the whole time. fantastic actor. Nicholas Wagner, who's actually a writer-director, not really an actor, gave an amazing performance as one of the villains. And Lansing O'Leary, great guy, does a lot of voiceover work. And just this whole cast is just such a pleasure to work with.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking with the writer and director of Can Hunt, John Michael Whalen. And I got to go back to Cliff McMullen. You know, I think that he gives just a wonderful performance. And one of the things that I love about him, honestly, is his face. Like, he has that weathered face as though he's been through some things in life. But everything I saw him do, it just came from, his performance came from a place of truth. Like, it's something about him that you know, you've met this guy before, and it feels like you really know him. So you kind of really get invested in his character.
I completely agree. I mean, when I was shooting the scenes with him, I mean, I would honestly get lost. And the fact that we were just shooting a scene, I mean, it really was like, I mean, just cutting through everybody. That this was like a guy just going off and talking, like real talk. And then to be like, oh, wait a minute, I wrote that. Yeah, I was like...
Wake up, John, wake up! Well, cool, man. So, you know, obviously the film is premiering, making its world premiere July 9th at the Cinema Arts Theater in Fairfax, Virginia at 7 p.m. How can folks get tickets for the film?
Well, good question. Basically, you can go on the cinemaartstheater.com website, and they have it in the coming soon section. Have a link where you can watch the trailer, read the synopsis, and also buy the tickets. I believe there's an extra dollar surcharge for that. Or you can just go to the box office the day of the screening, July 9th at 7 p.m. I believe there are tickets still available. Don't quote me on that yet, but still waiting to hear back on the numbers. But definitely at the box office as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's. I'm really, you know, like I said, if you're into the older, you know, early 90s, mid-90s indie film, this is definitely in that, you know, genre, and it's, yeah.
I mean, even to the poster artwork, it kind of, I don't know, it kind of has like a Predator vibe in a sense to me. But cool, man. So, John, it's been good talking to you. One question is, how can people find you/the film outside of, you know, the premiere?
Well, basically, you can always take a look at Torasu Productions, T-O-R-A-S-U, productions.com. In the middle of updating it, of course, there's so much going on right now, just to keep tabs on everything. It's eventually going to end up, you know, screened. So either Amazon or Vimeo on demand. But again, you know, it's the whole thing of like, you know, if you do that, then you can't really enter film festivals. And yeah. It's kind of crazy.
But that's all right. Again, John Michael Whalen, the writer and director of Can Hunt. John, I appreciate you coming on Picture Lock and telling us about the film. Good luck July 9th at the Cinema Arts Theater in Fairfax, Virginia, 7 p.m. Folks, you can check out the film then. Thanks, John.
Thank you so much, Kevin. It's great to be on.
That's all for this episode. I'd like to thank my guests, Richie Winsler, Aaron Goodmiller, and John Michael Whalen for coming on the show. You can find Picture Lock on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and Periscope. All social media is at Picture Lock Show. Watch back episodes of the TV show at youtube.com/picturelockshow. You can download the podcast in iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, and other places podcasts are downloaded. Feel free to give the show a hearty review if you are enjoying it. Don't forget to check out the website, picturelockshow.com, for movie reviews, news, and to subscribe to our newsletter to get a chance to win tickets for movie screenings in the DMV. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, you can fill out the form on the website. Drop me a line if you're enjoying the show as well at picturelockshow@gmail.com. All music is done by Mike S. The Prophet 13. Thanks, bro. I'm Kevin Sampson, and until next time, I hope you stay locked on film.